Well, hi, this is John Young for the H. Shields Institute and Project 512, and it is my deepest honor and with great gratitude that I'm here speaking with Anna Breitenbach all the way from Kenya right now. She's in Ingwe's homeland in Africa, and it's so wonderful that you are willing to share a story with me today and talk a little bit about how cultural elements have influenced us in our work in the world. So thank you, Anna B., for joining me.
It's my absolute pleasure and delight. I'm very happy to be alive in the effect of this work that has truly formed my journey so deeply. So I look forward to sharing with you today.
That's great. And I'm aware, we've known each other for a number of years, and we've done so many wonderful things together in different places in the world, and it's just been such a joy and honor to share life path with you, my soul sister, really. It's exciting to think about the influence that you've had in the world, and so many people really appreciate and admire how beautifully and clearly you bring animal communication out into the world, and it's helped so many. So thank you for that, for sure, and many, many blessings for many good years ahead for this wonderful work that you do. I wanted to share, I remember, for the people who are listening right now, I remember the night in Bellevue, Washington, and I must have been in the late 1990s, I don't even remember exactly when, that I was giving a talk on the Bushmen and geo-referencing data points, and there was a flyer that had a cheetah and a Bushman on it, and that brought you and I together that night, and I remember meeting you and talking to you, and then from there, we started to join our paths, on the sandbar in Washington from time to time. And then we began to do some deeper and deeper tracking work together. And eventually you were able to actually get over and meet the grandfather himself, Ingwe, and to spend really quality time with him and Elizabeth. And, it's been a wonderful journey to weave you in to the greater community of people who are practicing connection, especially on the deep level that you represent. And I think, of course, the cultural elements is the focus of our current project, the one that we're offering right now on the Kickstarter. And we've recorded, recorded 40 of 64 of those stories. I know as I spoke with Nate Summers yesterday at Wilderness Awareness School and was reviewing, these cultural elements and asking him, how he saw them. And he basically said, well, gosh, this is what we do. This is Wilderness Awareness School is really based on a lot of this, and, you walked into that container, so many years ago, and, you probably experienced greeting customs and being sent on errands and bonding with peers and, a peer mentoring environment and sit spot and, that culture of allowance, letting people have their experience and express it honestly and openly, which is so important to connection work, just being able to speak freely about what we're experiencing in our inner dialogue as well as in the outer world, so that we can come to understand communication, really, communication with nature, and that wiping off the road dust, when we arrive at places to get people really present and the sensitive conduct that allows for us to engage in that subtle communication, and learning to listen to bird language and child's passions and art of questioning and timeless wandering, and all those things, right? Do you remember them all?
Oh, I don't remember them all, but they're just so yummy. I'm sure a lot of it's become unconscious by now, actually. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah, that is the beauty of it. I was, of course, animal tracking is one of these cultural elements, and I was speaking in Salt Spring Island to folks up there with the Wisdom of the Earth program, and that they were our audience. And during that conversation or that story sharing, we talked about animal tracking and honoring empathy, imitating animals through creative movement. We talked about honoring lineage, honoring ancestors. And, you know, the one thing that's obviously right in alignment with your work is recognizing the intuitive connection with nature. And just wonder, how do you think these cultural elements, you know, shape the journey of communication? And if you can go back and think about how your path was shaped, you know, I was listing them out for you just so you'd, you know, have some reference points. But can you think of ways in which these things have influenced you or a story that brings something to light?
All of the customs you've mentioned and so much more seem to me, in retrospect anyway, to exist naturally in the natural world. And it's us modern humans who have perhaps strayed in our behavior away from that. But in the very blueprint of our design, we still intrinsically have that wiring. We still can access those ways of being. And it takes some prompting. It took prompting for me. And that's how this has all influenced my journey. In fact, opened up the journey into the intuitive communication and into remembering that and reconnecting with that particular ancient art that is now my life. It's the prompting. Perhaps it's a subtle and silent beckoning call from an aspect of nature. And that may call to us in how we notice what our passions and emerging desires are, what inspires us, what we wish our hobbies to be, even what speaks to us through our dreams, which species we notice, which art forms we engage with. So there are those subtle promptings from the natural world that's just gently trying to call us back into right relationship, not only with our wild and domesticated relatives, but the beautiful surprise to me has been how it beckons us back into right relationship with humans and indeed within our very selves too. So I've certainly experienced prompting from the natural world through the synchronicities that would show up or the injured animals that might cross my path at just the right time for me to notice. Or the fact that as a child growing up in South Africa, there was only one movie theater in the city of Cape Town that only showed movies once a week on a Saturday morning, and it was inevitably a Western in the days of John Wayne Westerns, and my mum would drag me along to the movie theater and could still smell the popcorn, the burnt popcorn, and usually quite close to the start of the movie, there'd be some posse rallying up to head off and go, you know, find the bad guys in the prairies. And the women folk of the town would be giving saddlebags full of food to the men for their journey. And my mom still speaks about this, that apparently I would immediately burst into tears and be completely inconsolable because the women were not giving food for the horses to eat on the long journey. And clearly the prairie was rather arid, not going to provide. And time and again, Saturday after Saturday, I'd be dragged out of the movie theater, crying inconsolably out of, I guess, a real compassion for animals at that time. So that was one of the signs. And the signs are not always going to be pleasant and fluffy white clouds. They might be the things that we experience grief around or the things that move us into, you know, despair or sadnesses. So there's all these promptings from the natural world, and if it is those that drag us into some difficult territory, I have to say that others of the customs, the grief tending and the sharing circles and the storytelling are fabulous medicine for that side of the equation. For me, the prompting came in another way too, not just from the natural world, but the prompting came from what emerged to become the 8 Shields movement, from the mentors. Sure, I've had plenty of teachers in my time, that the mentors just, well, completely outstripped any of the teachers, because it was on the sandbar on the Salton River during those Saturday morning tracking clubs that I'd be asking a question about a track. Even the most perfectly dried in mud, clear and crisp track, I couldn't figure out, because I was raised here in Africa and I didn't know a lot about North American species, and I certainly knew nothing about what their feet look like. And to my horror, when I would innocently ask an instructor, you know, expecting to receive an answer, what animal is this? I was not given an answer. I was given the question. And that, that just added to my curiosity. It became a burning fire of curiosity, both in content and process-wise. That was another beckoning, another prompting, to have my curiosity met with that lovely invitation to look deeper, to go further. What really struck me is that the mentors had not decided what my destination should be. They were just tuning in and present to where I was at and could see the next step for me. And they were completely unattached to the outcome. So for me, the prompting is from the human world, from the humans who were already connected and tuned back into what it is to be fully alive and connected. The prompting from the human world is the only thing that got me to stepping fully into my path and into my service work as an animal communicator, as an interspecies communicator. Now, without that, I might have even followed this path, this profession, for only a short while. I would have had to go it alone, and I wouldn't have had the contextual prompting into getting beyond my own skepticism. Because even when I did then more formally study, in quotation marks, interspecies communication, and had to do many, many case studies for the Institute that became the basis for the coaching, it was still amazing how my mind would try to talk me out of my intuition. My mind would come up with all sorts of ways in which I must just be imagining it, or they were all just lucky guesses. The inner dialogue was very strong and very informed by our modern human culture and peer groups work and those things that each of us just do deal with in our daily lives. And it was once a month, a tracking club. Only once a month I'd be in front of a handful of people who would just ask me questions in a different way, who would hear my stories. And only me telling those stories and having them heard is what eventually silenced my inner questioning, or at least allowed me to trust a little bit further. That made me start to listen more deeply. To the extent that I was being really heard, it turned right around and made me able to listen more deeply, even to nature, even to the animals I was trying to assist through the telepathic communication work. So I have to say that the promptings through these methods are what got me onto this path and grew me and nurtured me in this.
Yeah. You paint such a clear picture and a real feeling, you know. And I look right back to the Ring One cultural elements, you know, the importance of how people are greeted, right, on the sandbar, you know. And I'm saying on the sandbar, and for the listeners, there was a river that flowed through, the Skykomish River flowed through this beautiful countryside in western Washington. And there was this long stretch of sediment deposits there from when the river flooded. And it was a really great place to find footprints. And it was intermingled with thickets of berries and various shrubs and trees and willows and little patches of forest and things. And we could have elk on the sandbar, and we could have deer, and the occasional mountain lion would leave a trail for us to find, and coyotes were regulars, and the Western Washington hare. And, you know, so it was a really fun place to go, because we never knew what we were going to find there. But one of the things that we train people to do at tracking clubs is to really greet people in a way that helps them feel seen and you know, basically safe to be themselves, in essence. You know, we always start with a gratitude of some kind, and usually people will talk in a circle, you know, we'll just go around and say who I am and why I'm here and something I'm thankful for and why I like tracking, or, you know, we always had one theme to talk on, and in that way, everyone would hear everyone. And, I remember the annoyance of some people, who were, you know, wanting to get down to business. Hey, we came to learn tracking, you know, so let's start using our minds and our eyes, you know, in the way that we were trained in school, right? Learning tracking means, you know, like learning to read and write. But, you know, the cultural elements were an important part of creating a different kind of a container. And I like what you say, you know, that that's the prompting, you know, the various ways in which these elements work on the sandbar at the tracking club, you know, the greeting custom, sending people out on errands, you know, to find a track or a sign and to bring back the story to the group at the end. And the small groups that move mm-hmm. from station to station where conversation could be full, the peer bonding piece, you know, and as you already mentioned, that mm-hmm. art of track, the art of questioning and not answering questions, with answers, but with more questions, and that unconditional listening that you describe, on the part of the staff, you know, that was their job to listen to what people said and to just treat it as, a gift, no matter, you know, what they were saying. You know, it wasn't about them being right or wrong. It was about their own process of experience inside themselves and outside themselves. You know, and we, you know, finally we say that culture of allowance, you know, which, when I am with the Sun people that you know and love, that I know and love, those wonderful Naro people there in Botswana, it's so sweet to see that unconditional allowance that they hold, that loving space that just allows people to be who they really are in that moment. And it gives people that safety to fully be themselves. And I think, you know, that is a almost an ecological prompting, isn't it? You know, it's magnifying mm-hmm. the influences of nature that are communicating with us, and it's magnifying the nature inside of us that's communicating to us. And, you know, it's a beautiful story that you just told of that journey of, in a sense, right, unfolding, allowing those connections to open like gentle flowers and to expand out and to get stronger and stronger from mm-hmm. from that supportive container, essentially, which is woven of cultural elements. So, yeah, that was a really a beautiful mm-hmm. share.
Yeah, I must just say that, you know, still today, although my life for 15 years has been leading events and workshops and deep immersion experiences in telepathic animal communication, I must just say that probably the majority of people come on my events are not revealing to their friends and family back home where they've come, excuse me, for the weekend or the week. They've managed to find some other way to describe it. It's like, oh, it's just an animal behavior course, darling, or I'm going to learn to train my dog better, or because there's a lot of shyness around it, and because people are afraid, as I was, of the lack of listening in their very close, you know, groups, in their close peer groups, family groups, a lack of listening for an emerging reconnection with the deepest aspects of lives that might be happening for them. And they've learned the hard way, perhaps, that it's not well received amongst the people they spend their time with. So they come along to, you know, learn more, but secretively, and face all sorts of challenges in then trying to integrate that back into their lives. And I have to say that if I weren't living in the US at the time, and if I didn't have access to the likes of you and the people you'd mentored and the beautiful community that has sprung up around it, from the dear elders like Pam and Ed to the kids and the younger people in the residential program, if those people weren't there to hold and hear me, I would never have continued. I would have continued to hide this little light under a bushel. And I see the pain of that in people who come to my events now.
Hmm. Yeah, that is a very, very common story right there, you know, and I guess when we spend a lot of time in an Eight Shields Art of Mentoring based community, I think we begin to forget. It's like a protective bubble, really, in a way, of people who are really being supportive of each other. And we forget how unsupported people feel out there. Yeah, so thanks for sharing that. I think that's the important message, really, of the whole project, the Cultural Elements Project, is that there's a lot of, you know, what we call culture repair, need it, you know, where there really isn't a community, an organization, a family that wouldn't benefit from reflecting on how they could weave some of these tools into their lives to improve the quality of connection amongst themselves, you know, and with themselves, right? Yeah, thank you. I wanted to share two little pictures with you that I received, and then, you know, just hear your reflections on that. And then, we can call it a night because I know it's late for you there in Kenya, and I appreciate you staying up late for this conversation. I was in a...
Sure.
Yeah, super. I was in this gratitude ceremony that was hosted by a young woman who was... kind of moving across that rite of passage stage of life into her gift. And she was embarking on a career that was really, really perfectly in alignment with her love of this work. And she was really happy about the place where she was moving to and the job she found. And she was saying thank you to our community for that support that she received, you know. And during the gratitude ceremony, I was... You know, we're in that deep place where you get when people are being really open-hearted and in that really deep sharing time. And I just had this picture come into my mind so strong. And it was of these little hands reaching up from the ground. And they were like the hands of, you know, toddlers, basically, you know, two-year-olds. But all the hands were of the different races of people all over the world. And they were growing out of the ground like a garden. And they were all intermingled, you know, the various colors of skin. And I would say that it was it would be a beautiful picture, except that they were reaching up as if they were drowning. And drowning like going down for the third time kind of thing. And they were like really asking for help. And this very loud voice inside me said, you have the tools to help them and they need you. You know, you must help them. They're reaching out. Mm. And these, of course, are the future generations reaching up from the earth, you know. And I know it tied back to something that I heard our late dear uncle Jake Swamp say, you know, that we walk lightly on the Mother Earth because we're treading on the faces of the children who have not yet risen from the earth, you know, the future generations. And I knew that that's what this was, you know. And I came back and expressed this deep feeling of powerlessness, maybe. Like, I know they need my help. And I know that if they were able to be born into a community where supportive behavior was part of the norm, you know, the kind of things that you shared in your stories here, that they would get what they needed, you know, and their earth would be healthier. And they would be healthier. They would be seen and loved in their gift. And, you know, this, of course, is what we're talking about. You know, what these cultural elements do in a community setting is exactly that. They support that beautiful flourishing of people into their connection, their full connection with themselves. And they shine, right? And they connect with the earth and they feel that deep communication. And therefore, they care, and they become active in taking care of the earth and other people. You know, they, as Darshan Narvais, the psychologist who wrote the Neurobiology of Human Morality, said, you know, basically that people who grow up in these supportive cultural ways, or adults who find their way into those supportive cultural ways, become moral human beings. You know, they care for each other. They care for the earth. They care for the future, you know, and they act intrinsically with that love, you know. So I got this call out, and I was expressing this to my friend Mandy Lee, who works with me at H Shields, and I said, she says, you know, why are you depressed? And I said, well, I can't seem to do enough for these little hands reaching up, and I know it's a message to me, and I don't know what to do, and I don't feel fulfilled. And she said, well, you have to tell these stories. You have to tell the stories and get them out there and get Kalen, you know, from Village Video. Let him be your recording artist because you love working with him. And you've expressed that so many times, how much you enjoy his camera work and how easy it is to work together with him. And, you know, so that's where this project came from. You know, it was like a response to the little hands. And then the other piece I got just on Saturday after I spoke in San Luis Obispo at the Botanical Garden for Outside Now, and I was we were recording 33 through 40 of the cultural elements, and I was standing on the hill in Morro Bay looking out over the beautiful bay and this gorgeous rock that the Chumash hold, very sacred, that's there. I saw this picture play out in my head, and it was a picture of people who I never meet, you know, because they're far away from me, but they watch these little videos or they listen to the podcast, right? And they learn about these cultural elements and they begin to just experiment with these recipes in their own context, you know. And I visit such a community like 10 years later, you know, and I meet all these children who have grown up in that connected, supportive space. And I see all these adults and these elders and these people of different stages of life all woven together in a way that they didn't grow up that way. You know, they didn't see that as children, but through this recipe file card, you know, they cooked up a beautiful community, right? And they gave me a hero's welcome, which is, you know, not something I'm necessarily looking for, right? But I got the biggest hugs and the sweetest greetings from the children who were so grateful to me. And then I suddenly realized, you know, that is a real possibility, you know. You know, through this amazing technology and media that we're able to share things like this with people we may never meet. And they can literally take these things and apply them in their own backyard, so to speak, and just do so much to help restore the broken web of culture that so many live under now in the times that we live in, you know. Mm-hmm. And it just filled me, you know, it just filled me with so much, positive feeling. It's beyond joy. It's, it just made me feel so grateful, for this project. So, yeah.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. And what you have found out about in those communities you visited, it's just the tip of the iceberg of what you've come to know about. There's many, many more out there whose voices might never make direct contact with you, but it's the multiplier effect. You know, pluck at the heartstrings of one person and the beautiful resonance of that chord sounds out into their lives and it is felt and received and reflected and grown by the others in their lives. And this is the multiplier effect that a media-based program can offer. It's environmentally friendly. That's what I like about distance learning and distance-based offerings, because there's no lots of expensive flights around the world for people to get to go to places to sit in a room where there's electric lights burning and, you know, all the carbon footprint of getting to places. People around the world can just be in their own environments and receive these wisdoms that are as old as the hills themselves, quite literally. They're also deeply embedded in your and other people's research into what is common amongst the native cultures around the world. And what are those threads of what it is to be human that have made for success. So being able to tap into that without having to go anywhere is just incredible. And I too have been very pleasantly surprised and taken aback by a similar phenomenon that happened with a segment of the Animal Communicator DVD going viral on YouTube, and now over 10 million people have seen some version of it online. And in itself, that has nothing to do with me, because our dear friend Craig Foster, the filmmaker, doesn't even have copyright of the footage. There's no royalties. There's no direct link. But when occasionally a story filters through, how someone sat at home late one evening with a cup of tea and watched it and went out into their garden the next day and checked in with their tree that is suffering and no person or horticulturist can figure out why, and they just perhaps surreptitiously try a little telepathic communication with their tree and get perhaps a sense of a certain taste in their mouth. A lady named Barbara was telling me this, Barbara in California. She asked her tree what was up because it was dying and what it might need. And she asked from that gentle place in her heart and an open mind. And she got a taste in her mouth of very sort of chalky kind of mineral taste that she didn't know anything about, but she went down to the garden center and described the taste in great detail. And some keen assistant there figured out the particular compound that would address certain health challenges. And she bought this and took it home, and the tree was healed. But when she was paying for this at the checkout counter, the shop assistant said, so how did you know to get this? It's not an obvious remedy for your tree. How did you know to come down and buy this? And Barbara rather shamefacedly said, well, the tree told me. And the shop assistant said, oh my, it sounds like you've been watching YouTube and seeing that thing called the animal communicator. And Barbara said, well, as a matter of fact, I have. When things like that happen, you know, people are turning it around and putting it into practice in their lives. And, you know, I remember when I moved back to South Africa in 2002, I was extricated from having access in the social sense and in the daily sense to just my tribe of you good people, you know, in the U.S. that I really consider myself family. And I had my whole, like, oh no, my whole journey with that apparent loneliness. And then along came some of the early offerings of Eight Shields, like Village Talk, a weekly just kind of community check-in over Skype or landlines or phoning in or whichever method technology provides. And there's a couple of versions for different time zones and Europe and the US and so on. And I remember being involved with those for a while and what joy it brought me. I didn't say a thing for several weeks, you know, in a row. I just listened and heard and listened with my heart. And it might seem like just a weekly call, like the hangout, but what's behind it is the sum total of these decades of the beautiful and natural design, these cultural elements that come into place to just manifest as a village talk or as a video module offering or as a greeting ritual or as a sense meditation. So what might seem like an innocuous weekly check-in with some friends elsewhere in the world is a very deeply connective practice, and it's informed by and it has the beautiful groundswell of the wisdom of the 512 elements behind it. And that has remained my community. And even if I'm not participating in the worldly or in the spoken sense, it's always there. And even on the workshops that I run now, I'm, as a matter of practice, offer and lead a sense meditation for folks to expand their five senses. I think some participants must think, hey, wait a minute, we came here to get in touch with our sixth sense, with telepathy. Mm-hmm. What's all this about the five senses? So what I've not just learned, but what I have become through my time with the nature connection field is that all of this does depend on us becoming just more related, and that really, really does mean our five senses as well. We are human animal. We have our five senses, and the more we can expand those, the greater is our ability to operate from the full place of all of our senses. And wow, it's just so beautiful to be alive when one is tapped in that way.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you're in Ingwe's beloved Kenya, And he said so many times to so many people, develop those five senses, right? And absorb nature like a blotting paper soaks up ink. And, you know, awaken all those five senses, and then a sixth sense emerges. You know, he so often said that.
Right.
You know, it's so sweet to hear that coming from you, you know, knowing that you all listened to Ingwe tell his leopard story, you know, via recording there in that place. And yeah, it just brings him present to me right now. And my gratitude for having had such beautiful elders and the elders before them that kept these things alive that could be passed down, that we have something to share and to offer support through. It's just a great blessing. So, yeah, well, I should let you get to some rest there, Anabi. And I so appreciate everything you shared. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Well, perhaps my rest will have some dreams that are more than dreams, that are visions.
Right, to quote Ingwe, yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate this. And I just want to ask folks, you know, you might be listening to this sometime in the future, and the Kickstarter may already be over. But if it's still in that time, we could sure use your help and support. And please, you know, share it around Project 512, Kickstarter. And we'd greatly appreciate that. We're getting close. We're a little over halfway on our funding goal, but we could use the boost there and to get there so we could cover the cost of all this filming and recording. You know, it takes a lot. And I appreciate your help there, Anabi, and all that you're doing in the world, and your help for Eight Shields, as always. And I'm always glad to support you and look forward to working with you and visiting with you in person someday soon. And we'll figure that out. And until then, blessings on your journey there, and safe home when you're done. And we'll be in touch.
Thank you so much. Thank you for keeping the fire burning, and I look forward to sharing fireside stories with you soon.
Yes, right on. Okay. Lots of love.
Bye for now. Bye for now.